Welcome to Seize the GM. I'm your host, Zended.
I am your co-host, Jules.
And I'm Garda Moje.
Have you ever had a great idea for a campaign? Do you have a group of friends who want to play an RPG, but you have no one to run it?
Do you want to see what the world is like behind the GM screen instead of in front of it? Well, we're here to help you do just that.
Each week, the three of us will be discussing various GMing topics, terminology, maps, atmosphere, world building, you name it. So sit back and relax.
Let us help you
improve your art of GMing.
One show at a time.
Banter. And we are entering the banter segment.
Hey, welcome back.
Welcome back, folks.
Goodness. How's everybody doing?
I am upright and functional. All automated systems are functioning within normal parameters for this time of year.
No,
how about y'all?
Not.
Bleep bloop.
Yeah. I can't complain. I've had a pretty crazy last couple of weeks of trying to get the website fixed, which by the time this all comes out will have been old hat and everybody will have already known about it.
But in theory, by the time this comes out, everyone will have forgotten the website was ever down.
Yes.
I doubt it, because a lot of people that do listen to it do have some kind of interaction with technology, and Noah's like, okay, screw this. I am going to launch this into the Grand Canyon, because then I might get some entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
we've all been there.
Yeah. It's been tough. I'm not going to lie, but my hope is that in the next couple of days, hopefully things should be, if not fixed, at least a huge troubleshooting element will have been finalized. And if it's not on my end and not on WordPress's end, then it's the server that has a problem.
Well, here's the thing. Once you figure it out, everything will be up and running again. Yay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
This is tech. It's just waiting until the next disaster. That's all. Yeah. We all know how it works.
Yeah. But I got to start. Now I found out that I'm going to be running a game on the opposite weeks of when I'm playing.
Yay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Again, it's more Pathfinder, because that's what we play around here. And hopefully I'm doing the pirate one. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Well, we've been having fun with Deadlands game, and oh my.
Deadlands is tricky. I'm not going to lie.
I love it. It's, you know, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everything I've read on it, it looks like it's a lot of fun. I've never actually gotten a chance to play it, but yeah.
Well, I feel very proud of us. We just defeated, one of the Reckoner's minions, one of the bringers of nightmares and darkness. They have like almost an infinite supply of them. So it's not like, oh yeah, you know, final boss or something. It's like, oh no.
This isn't even mid boss.
This isn't even mid boss level, man. But we had a great time, and there was some bits of like silliness, some bits of insanity, and of course the mad scientist starts playing with stuff he shouldn't be playing with, and pretty much saw hell, and now he's crazy.
Oh. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, if the people listening remember when I was posting the Rifts characters back in February and March, I got the bug there and picked up a whole bunch of Palladium books I'd missed over the last, 20 years. And I've been catching up and reading on those and trying to find someone who's going to play those with me.
I will not run riffs. The thing is, I'll read some of the stories in the books, but for me, as much as I liked, you know, the universe and the story and the ideas, it's just, for me, I don't know. It seems sometimes the mechanics kind of got it in the way of play. So I kind of resigned myself. I'll just read the books and the fluff.
It's a story-rich world for sure. And the mechanics are, if you remember my description, it's crunchy and very peculiar. And the idea of game balance for Palladium and for Kevin Symbieta is found in the GM. And it's the GM's job to balance it, not his job to balance the party, the class members.
That is true. The problem is, though, not a lot of people that ended up playing Rifts took that to heart. That system set itself up, even though that wasn't the intention of the creators, as more of an adversarial between the GM rather than everyone getting together kind of to, you know what I mean?
Well, this is, you know, again, be with anything with Palladium and Rifts specifically, there is you have to come to the table with, this is my low-powered character, this is my mid-powered character, this is my high-powered character. Because
Or you have to have a GM who's willing and able to have the different levels. In a lot of ways, what we're describing as potential weaknesses of the game are a chance for a strong group, for a strong party to actually shine. Is if you've got a great group of friends who are great at role-playing, you could mix the vagabond with the dragon. And it come out gloriously.
Yeah.
You could. But it's hard to do in the rule set. And I get that.
Let's just say this is not a beer and pretzels pick up and go, or even, you know, your standard D&D, you have a day of character creation. Rifts is a little bit more... Let's just say it has a lot more pitfalls.
You can make a character just as quickly. The problem for a lot of people is that there are so many options. And that may be something we talk about at some point as well, is looking at systems, the game balance that goes into options. Is it good or is it bad to limit the options of the players, and in what way? How does that create chances for the GM with limited or unlimited character creation?
And
the other thing is one thing with Rifts, and I remember it was a dude that was playing one of the crazies, and the thing is, if people just want to play serious, you know, sometimes it's kind of hard, but the thing is, like, if you're willing to go with anything goes, and you can do, you know, you could do a super crazy power, like, he was a crazy. And, you know, his weapon was a giant foam finger.
Yeah.
But, and everyone, most people be like, oh, that doesn't fit, But he made it work, and it was fun, it was a little bit silly, but some people, you know, just because of Rifts being what it is, are like, well, you know, kind of get the genre snobs or some stuff like that. You know, it's like, well, that doesn't quite fit into the world, you know, like,
right.
You know,
and that's a different sort of thing. And there's nothing wrong with that. But you actually mentioned something kind of interesting when we first started talking about Rifts in the banter segment. And that is there's so much to it. You'll just go ahead and read it and not worry about the potential for playing it.
Yeah.
And that actually ties in so well to our main topic, which is canon.
That's why I'm wondering why Garmage initially brought up Rifts, because it does inspire a lot of talk about canon and how much of it, how little.
Yeah. You think I would cede a conversation to lead into where I'm trying to get to in 3 minutes down the road?
Yes, Mr. Master Manipulator.
Uh-huh. But
technicalities.
That is one of the beauties of that game is if you're doing it, it's there. And mm-hmm. not all games have a ton. Some have none.
Yeah, I was going to say, Rifts has a 25-year unbroken streak of canon building and growing upon itself with a much shorter time period in that world. Mm-hmm. Shadowrun has a similar age, but it has advanced its world timeline almost in the same ratio, and so it doesn't feel as overwhelming as if you're trying to understand the entire world of Rifts. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say personally, when I'm running a game, I'm a canon junkie. I'm the lore guy. I like starting with probably 90-95% of the existing canon as the basis for a campaign.
Yeah, but you let's put it this way, sir. You've got a functioning brain. And as much as I love Shadowrun, I mean, for God's sake, you got a tattoo of it. The thing is, though, that I don't remember all of it. I can get what I can from the core rule book. And Zippy does this as well. It's like, we'll get what we can. We'll get as many of the lore books as we can and, you know, try and pull. But, well, you know, when you're missing memory, there are gaps. So we fill that in. And, you know, it's like, and some things we'll find out, it's like, ooh, that doesn't really go according to canon. And, you know, we'll figure. And the thing is, it depends on, does the canon fit with, if it's in the middle of our story, does it fit with where we're going right now, or is it going to kind of run contrary?
Well, those
or
are
is it something
the-
I want? But if we find out about it beforehand, you know, it's kind of that, well, I liked my idea better, you know, and it's at that point, sometimes you have to see, it's like, all right, is this what you want? Your thingy, your idea, your thing in the game? Or, you know, are you going to kind of, you know, tuck that away and use like the officially official. And that can be kind of hard.
Yeah. See, now whenever I'm doing it, I, as a general rule, start with whatever the core book has. And that's pretty much what I start with. If there's any other additional books, I don't want to bring them in, because I've always felt that if you start adding all of the lore, like for Shadowrun, if you've added all 25 years of lore, that's a lot for somebody that's never played the game in the course of 6 months to learn 25 years of lore. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to force them to do that. Instead, I'll say, this is the lore as it's presented in the main book. This is what we're using, and everything else we'll make up, because then it's not so much this is all the canon, it's this is our version of this game.
Yeah. And the thing is, also, there are certain games out there that have a world but no exact canon. And I'm like, Champions has, the world has superheroes. Okay.
Comparatively.
I'm talking comparatively.
Let me tell you the story of Dr. Destroyer and his generations of times he has destroyed the city of Detroit.
Yeah, there's...
Champions has canon.
Yeah.
Not, no, well, First Ed didn't.
If you want to talk about a game that has minimal to no canon, as written, D&D, base, like just the rule books, there is almost no canon.
Yeah, there's the world. There's like, these are the gods, these are the magic powers, no. These are the races, go have fun.
Yeah, because that's the whole idea is, or you can purchase their worlds, various mm-hmm. worlds. I don't know if they still do them all, but I mean, there were...
Yeah, but there used to be like... Oh, gosh, what was the vampire one? You know what I'm talking about.
Ravenloft.
Thank you. I mean, there used to be Ravenloft and Eberron and... You know,
Darkstone, Forgotten Realms, Greyhawk. I mean,
exactly.
All of those. And
but
each
they
one
fit
had their
with
own...
the D&D mechanics, but they could go plop, 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 plop wherever you wanted.
Yeah.
And that's one of the strengths, I think, for how 5th Ed is used for Dungeons & Dragons. If you look at the 5th Ed Player's Handbook, they've got an appendix about deities with a bunch of different options without it being set with one particular location.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that we've seen. I think part of the growth of D&D has been its accessibility in the last several years.
Yeah.
Now, when I work with it, I like having the option of more like jazz than a jazz band. That's why I like having the canon there to work with. It's easier for me to riff off of the structure of the world than it is to necessarily always come up with everything whole cloth on my own.
Yeah, I kind of, mine is more, well, same thing in the jazz, but mine is the more improv to a, in a much more small session where there, we already have a, and I will keep going like to Little Fears, and stuff like that, where there's a world and there's an expectation therein. You know, it's like, okay, but you can do certain things with it, but it still has that decent structure, but for it, it's very, very vague. D&D has almost no world structure. It's the, here's the rules, here's the deities and the races. Now go and build whatever the heck you want. So you could have it, you know, super magic-y with dragons and everything everywhere. You could have it in the desert, or you could have it wherever the heck you want it.
Yeah.
So well, I kind of like the jazz. I like it, but I like it a little bit more where I already have a framework and I already have like what the world expects and I can riff inside of that. But I wish I could know all the lore of Rifts or Shadowrun or something like that, because it's amazing, but yeah. I can't know it all.
Well, and that's one of the cons of trying to run or being involved in a high canon game is that they can be so developed that it's difficult to hold on to. And it's difficult for players to sometimes separate their player knowledge from character knowledge and let the game unfold. That is a potential downfall.
Well, and there's another downfall to that as well, is in some of these, the canon is so ingrained, like in the Forgotten Realms. Early Forgotten Realms, it was impossible because there were so many high-level characters and mid-level characters, and you knew what color, you know, this king's underwear was. I mean, there was so much written.
Everyone knew Elminster.
But where do these new characters fit in that world? It's so hard when you have such a dense canon. It's hard to find the place for the players in that world, in a world like that.
Yeah. Well, there's some lore high canon ones that I feel accomplish that by leaving open stories that involve heroes or a group or someone who did something, but they don't specify who. And that benefit of having these entries into the larger meta plot, into the larger canon, I find a positive where it's, we know these people did something. We know that a group of heroes infiltrated this empire's event and broke their ability to invade us. Hey, guess what? They haven't told me who those heroes were, so guess what we're doing next week.
Right, yeah. And you can do that if you have that in
depth
knowledge of the canon as the GM. You can do things like that.
And here's Jules. The thing. I'm sorry. It's just like when you were bringing that up, Gordon Lange. There's an actual. I'll bring this up now. Video game analog for that same thing, and it's Dark Souls. You're told in the very beginning, at first there was just the Eternal Dragons, and then fire came, and there was light, and there was darkness, and you learned about like Lord Gwyn and the great gods and all that other stuff, but it gives you no real story of what exactly is happening now. You don't know where the gods went. You don't know what's going on with all these monsters, and you find it out through gameplay. The story is revealed there, and it's purposely vague. But it's purposely vague enough that you can kind of put your own spin on it.
Right.
You know, and that's, so there is very much lore. There's a lot of lore, but the world, when you start, like after you know all the history and the Witches of Izalith birthed the Chaos Flame and blah, blah, blah. You know, so when you get into Lost Izalith, you know that big, like the big overstory and the big stories and legends, but you're there right now and guess, and you get to discover what some of these illusions and a scroll you picked up, and a chat with another pyromancer and da-da-da-da.
Right.
So.
Well, one of the pros that you really can have with low canon is that unbridled freedom. And Zen was talking about the collaborative nature of this hobby, and it's easier to kind of start that process in a lot of low canon environments because what I like is what I like, and we have these ideas together, and that can sometimes be a lot easier and a lot more accessible to a lot of players.
Yeah.
And GMs.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's one of the things why I like having. So for instance, when I started running my Eberron game, all that we had was the Eberron campaign setting book, just the original book. That was it. And there was a lot of information that was just like, here's these kingdoms. They've all been at war. This war's just recently ended. And war could break out at any moment. And here's bits and here's bits and here's bits. And these are the trade company houses and, you know, all the little bits of the kind of fiddly bits that exist in the world. But they don't tell you much about them. And they keep them very vague. And when I first started running it, I had two of my players that were like, I want to play a dragon-marked character. So they were like, I'm a member of this trade house. And the other one was like, I'm a member of this trade house. And we knew that each of the houses kind of had kind of their own culture because they worked within all of the countries and they did all kinds of other things. So they kind of had to figure out how they all fit together and why, you know, how each of those houses worked. So they, my two players, literally helped forge how each of these houses, their dress mannerisms, their speech mannerisms, even the way that marriages worked inside of the house. Like they had done all of this research and came up with all of these ideas and we used it. And we had these really rich and complex trade houses. And then the book came out for the dragon marked houses. And I started reading and I'm like, oh, these are horrible. And I just threw the book away. I'm like, we're never touching that book ever again. And all the players were like, oh, awesome. Great. Because I decided right then and there, the stuff that we had spent the last year or 2 years building was so much better and it was so rich compared to what they had other people writing come up with. And it fit our game. It was ours, mm-hmm. not theirs.
Yeah. That's the one thing you always have to remember is your game is your game. And even in a lore-heavy, canon-heavy setting, you know what? It's your game.
Yeah.
Play how you want to play. Now, for me, though, while I like some of the – where it's not giving extra stuff into, I want to say, like, canon of the world. But it might give extra stuff, like stuff about – okay, what are pets like around here? What kind of animals? Stuff that might help give flavor, but not, it doesn't give any more of the overarching like meta plot of the world. So if you're like, like almost like an arsenal book in Shadowrun, it's just like, hey, these are cool new weapons. We can, where it doesn't really change the canon that you're running with, sort of, hopefully.
And you and I are almost exact opposites here, where what I crave is more of the world in which
to hopscotch between.
Wish I would do that if I could remember it. The problem is brain damage has destroyed so much. I can't, as much as I would want to, I can play in it, but I can't run it as well because I have such big gaps. It's not that I don't want to. I don't like it. It's like I can't.
Now, here is something that I'm going to pitch out there because we've talked about this in a previous episode on co-GMing. And if you have somebody in your group that is like Gardemanger, who is a lore hound, I mean, he loves it. He loves digging in it, finding all of these nuances. Tap that. If you can't remember it, say,
"Use me.
How do you remember this really obscure thing? I kind of vaguely remember that there was something about it." And he will, and do it between sessions, because he will go to town digging through everything to find that one paragraph or that one sentence. I mean, like, oh yeah, this is the thing right here. And they'll think you're a gut because you remember this is what they love about the game. You give them what they love. You let them do this. And it's they feel like they're contributing.
Yeah.
More.
It's more of, do you want your players to play in a sandbox that already has like the world built? Or do you want the world to be built as they play in it? And the thing is, like, both of them are right and both of them are wicked fun to do. Yeah. You just have to, you know, and here's the best thing. If you got people in your game that are kind of like Gardemanger, a lore monkey, that can actually help you if you're like me and can't put all of that together. But I can run a darn good cyberpunk campaign, you know, of almost in almost any world. But the problem is, like, I don't have all the nits and bots and old legends, and I don't remember the entire story of Fast Jack and all that other good stuff. But if I got players that do, I can build on that. But if they're completely new to the game,
most of us high canon lore monkeys are also happy to tell you where the negative space is, where the holes in canon are that are yours to exploit, because we see it. And we want it filled in. And guess what we're okay with? It's in this game we're playing? Okay.
Yeah.
Let's do it. That'll be fun.
Oh, yeah.
And don't think that someone who likes high canon, who likes knowing that, is necessarily going to be hidebound to not being flexible. And don't, for yourself, if you are a low canon person, discount the opportunity to use or maybe even tweak some of what's presented in the canon material. Shadowrun and cyberpunk games and a lot of what's out there, especially now, does it as options or rumors.
Yeah.
So what's canon is one of three things that you get to choose between, or maybe some combination thereof. Don't sell your own ability short to engage your players.
Yeah. Yep. And that's entirely the way to do that is, you know, use the resource. You have all of these resources around you. Use every one you can. If you're not good at remembering something, use the guy that is.
Oh, yeah.
Use them. Because it does help.
They'll feel good, too.
Yeah.
They'll feel good because they are like, I know this. And they feel like they're, aside from just playing in it, but they're contributing to running the game, which helps a little. Sorry, Zen, didn't mean to cut you. Sorry.
Cool. That's cool. Because the other thing is that you have then also where those gaps are that the lore guy has been like, hey, no, there's these holes here, and here. Use those people that have that creative drive to help drive into those and fill those out. Because they'll want to do that. They're like, oh, there's a hole. I get to fill it with my ideas. Fill away. Use those. Use your players as tools to help increase the greater overall stories. Because as much as this is, it's all collaborative. I mean, one of the biggest things is it's collaborative storytelling.
Yes.
And
it is.
If
everybody
is not doing it, then it's not collaborative. It's you telling a story or whoever telling a story. It's not everybody contributing what they want or they think could be cool. It's just one or two people force feeding somebody else at the table what they want it to be. And that's not any good either. So,
however you choose to use the canon or printed material out there for your games, high canon and low canon both have their pros and cons. Look at your team. Look at your players. Do you have a lore monkey? Or maybe if you're fortunate, two or three? Use us. Have us actually make you the big map of the world, which has this big glaring hole, and turn to the artist stuck between us and say, hey, what do you think's in there? Do you want to go take a look over the hill? And use us to the best way to make everyone at the table tell a story, have fun, and most of all, I was trying to cue you to come in on that.
No, but the thing is, like, most of all, you know, have fun.
Yeah.
Out of everything.
Yeah. This is supposed to be
fun. The lore monkeys will build it. The lore monkeys will build it. And what we're supposed to do is, you know, you build it, we play the music, let's dance.
Yeah. Exactly. So, well, as we are always ever so fond of saying,
talk to your players. This is supposed to be fun for everybody. Please.
And we could go on for hours.
And we could go on for hours. That was the other one. Because all of these are, you know, we're just getting rolling. So, and speaking of rolling,
and now we enter Stat Blocks. This is a segment where you can use something that we've created in your game tonight.
3, 2, 1, not it.
Zen, go.
Go to Manger.
I already said Zen, go.
Oh, seriously? All right.
Yeah, at the same time she was saying 3, 2, 1, not it.
Okay, fine.
I'm a terrible person.
Fine, whatever. All right. Dr. Seamus Gratz was at one time the world's leading volcanologist. While out researching a new volcano that seemed to have grown overnight, he was lost. The research team that was with him was very excited by this new find. They set up a base camp not too far from the site. They had the backing of to have everything, all of the latest toys. Once there, they started to do some initial groundwork that, you know, might help to figure out why this volcano had just erupted for no warning out of the blue. But while out at the site on the third day, something happened. All the equipment stopped feeding the information that would have told them something was very, very wrong. The lava tube that they were near just poured lava like something from a movie. Not at all like it's supposed to move. The entire team was presumed dead. While everyone in the team was covered by the lava flow, something happened to the doctor. His suit didn't save him for long, which is what the other doctors monitoring the situation wanted. As the lava started to eat the suit, a strange thing started to happen to Gratz. He started to fuse at a cellular level with this lava. There was something more than just lava. He changed in both body and mind. The process gave birth to the creature we call Krakatoa today. Or living lava.
Nice superhero.
Creepy.
Yeah. I was like, I need a superhero. I haven't done one in a while. So I'm like, ah, this is great.
Bartomange, you got to go next.
All right. Sometimes it takes an epic sacrifice, a valiant but ill-fated action, to create a lasting legacy in this world. Stories and legends build the power around the items passed down from generation to generation. And you can scarcely believe your eyes when you stumble on this shield, this bastion of an older era. Its design fits everything you've heard. The slight embossment, the odd battered edge misshapen by a powerful blow, and the very aura about it bring it all to mind in the stories wash over you. It was another age, one lost to history and to the dreams of the immortals. It was the fall of the first human empire and the last stronghold's final stand. The captain of the guard stood true and ensured that the messages of their loss would make it to the crown. And the captain of the guard stood firm and heard the hooves of the horses thunder away from the fort. The captain of the guard stood alone. The captain stood long enough and longer than any thought, but it was a foregone conclusion that this captain would fall. The story isn't that the captain stood and that the captain fell, but that his shield and armor surface every generation. They find their way into the hands of new wielders, from humans to dwarves to titans and to kobolds. They find their way into the hands of those who would protect their kith and kin. They find their way into your hands. This is the captain's stained shield. But where is the armor? And what is it you will be facing that called such a legendary item to your hands?
Oh, my God.
I love that.
Dang, dude. Ah, shoot. I feel like I should have read yours. I don't read these before because I like to be surprised. I can't follow that.
You let me go second. You'll do fine. Yours is going to be fantastic.
Yeah. All right. And I've got the last farewell. To quote a great and sonorous sage, war never changes. From soldiers meeting on the field of battle to flying aces dogfighting in the skies. And since war never changes, there are those who will never be able to say goodbye. And from this sadness and longing, the last farewell was born. No one knows the true nature of the last farewell. Divine, mystical, psychological. It seems to fit and defy all of them. Maybe death sees value and allows this phenomenon. Or maybe it's the strength of the human soul that will not be denied its final desire. The last farewell has been described in many ways. Well, the location at least. A pocket dimension. A psychic link. Or sometimes standing before the gates of heaven. A heartbeat before the last breath seems to be eternity, and in that eternity, the last farewell manifests. It allows the dying to say goodbye to one person, the one who they love the most. A boy dying on the fields of Halidon Hill cries for his mother, wanting to be held one last time. As his final breath leaves his body, he sees his mother and feels her arms around him. She whispers as tears fall from her eyes. I love you, son. I love you, Ma, he whispers back, and he is gone. His mother, miles away, wakes up, fresh tears on her face, and she knows what has happened. She was allowed to say goodbye and kiss her son before he died. And unlike most dreams, it will never fade from memory. She will remember it all with perfect clarity, and she whispers a small prayer of thanks. So she tells her friends and family about her experience, and the story of the phenomenon of the last fear grows. The last farewell is the last bit of grace for the dying and for the ones that they love and who love them in return. This shred of grace has prevented angry spirits and reduced the darkness that surrounds battlefields. And it occasionally has even prevented hatred from festering and growing. And it has changed mankind so slowly over the centuries. Because if war never changes, then it is mankind who must change.
Nice. I like it. What are you talking about? You did fine.
That's a really beautifully hopeful piece from you.
Yeah.
Oh, I ripped the title from a Roger Whittaker song called The Last Farewell.
Hey. It's all good. Whatever draws that inspiration.
Well, it's usually Zippy playing Dark Souls or something. I watch him play, and it's just random stuff happens when that happens.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, okay, let's go
ahead. I like the armor, though. It's just like, the shield is like,
Yeah.
I want to play.
Yeah. All right, so let's go ahead and flip on into the next thing.
You got it.
Lexicon, where we give you cool words to help improve your vocabulary.
All right. Here we go.
Bring it.
Kirk.
To clasp one's hands above one's head and bring them forcefully down upon your opponent?
Firm. No. The noun.
It's not the Picard. It's not like the foil to the Picard, is it? Sorry.
That is great.
I knew I had to do that.
We should put that as a separate one. No.
Yep.
No. The definition of Kirk, it's chiefly Scottish, and it means church.
Okay.
And the capitalized version is the National Church of Scotland, as distinguished from the Church of England or the Episcopal Church of Scotland. So
that's kind of cool.
That makes sense.
So, and it goes now, the etymology and origin go all the way back to Old Norse and Old English.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not as strong in my Old Norse.
That's Kirkja, which is, and in Old English it was Surisi, which, and then that went into Middle English, which is the northern dialect that is actually Kirk, basically. First known use, 12th century. And it is a bottom 30% of words used.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That's because the Picard is used so much more often.
It is. So, well, guys, I think that's going to go ahead and wrap up our main show. So we're going to go ahead and give out our closing remarks, shout out things. And, we'll go from there. I'm going last on this one.
All right, I'll start. All right, I've been playing Deadlands and all this other stuff, and I got hooked on this game on Steam called West of Loathing. It's done by the same guys that did Kingdom of Loathing, which is an online web-based MMO that started in the 90s, and they're still updating that guy. But West of Loathing, you're a stick figure. And you can choose to be a cow puncher, you know, or a bean tosser, or a snake oiler. So it's either like melee, magic, or gunfighting in that order. But everything went to hell when the cows came home. So I'm going to head out west because I'm a cow puncher. These cows ain't going to punch themselves. And it's one of the funniest, goofiest. It still has a lot of that feel, that old Western feel and flavor, but it is so over the top goofy and so many wonderful puns. Like, one of the best things I found is, like, I'm wandering around, and you can wander and you can get, first thing you have to do is find some horses, and then you can choose what horse you want to ride out on a dark horse, on a pale horse, on a crazy horse, or regular born horse. You know, so there's the puns in that. And then, you know, as you're wandering around, I mean, you start in the town of Dirtwater, of course. But holy cow, I was doing wandering and I found Hellstrom Ranch. I'm like, oh my God.
That's
fun. You get all these just Oh, it's absolutely delightful. And here's the thing. If you pick up the game and you're in the very, very beginning in the room, go and read all the characters, the books they have on their bookshelf. Because if you do, you will unlock stupid walking. And it will enable itself. And pretty much you will pogo around on your lantern or swim. It's Ministry of Silly Walks, pretty much. So awesome. Just as your character moves. And it's stick figures, which make it great. So there you go.
That's so fun.
It is delightful. And it doesn't take it can run on almost any system. And I will not stop laughing.
That's cool.
Yeah, dude, it's one of the, I summoned a bean golem. That's awesome. You know, cool. There's a spell called fava lava, like fava beans. It's just like, oh God. Oh yeah.
Cool.
I looked at our topic today, about canon and kind of the problems it can cause on how to work within high canon and low canon for inspiration. And since it just wrapped up, I'm going to recommend that you go watch some Star Wars Rebels. This is a cartoon that took an example of how to take a huge and well-loved existing canon in a respectful but new direction, how it threaded that needle of the existing canon but told a new story. And it just wrapped up. The show ended not long before we have recorded this. And I think if you haven't seen it and you're a Star Wars fan, you are missing out. And if you have seen it, then you know you want to go back and watch some more of it again.
Awesome.
More stuff to watch.
Yeah, I don't need any more. I'm trying to cut back.
It's over.
No.
It's a closed universe to watch now.
Like, is it on Netflix or something?
So much to do already. So much to watch and catch up on. So I'm actually backing away from things as much as I can right now. But in that vein, I have so many things to watch and everything else. Unplug. Turn your cell phone off. Turn the TV off. Spend a night doing something else with your family today. Because you only have a finite number of days. And if you don't take time to do those things, you may look back years from now and realize that you missed a shot at something with your child or your spouse at a certain point. And I have been doing a lot of that where I've been spending, like, in the evenings, when I get home from work, I will spend the time between after we have dinner and when she has to go to bed, either playing video games with her or reading books or playing, you know, board games or whatever she wants to do, because that is, there's only so many days, and family is super important to me, not to everybody, obviously, but to me it is. So I think you should, you know, spend some time with him. So that's mine.
I still like it. It's all good.
So.
And on that note, unplug, see your family or the sun this weekend, have some fun, and think about how you fit in the debate of high canon, low canon, or how to dance between them.
Yes, indeed. So.
Absolutely.
All right, folks, until next week, have a good
one. Keep playing games.
You can contact us or the show using Twitter, Facebook, or plain old email. Our Twitter accounts are @Zendead,
@JulesPodcaster,
and @2050GardeMoget.
And the show's Twitter account is @SeizeTheGM.
You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/SeizeTheGM. Or chat with us and other RPG lovers in our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/SeizeTheGM.
You can email questions or comments to the show at admin@SeizeTheGM.com. And if you have a few bills you want to send us, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/SeizeTheGM podcast. And we thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Seize the GM. Feel free to leave a comment about this episode on our webpage, www.seizethegm.com. Let the dice fall where they may, and we'll see you all again next week.
Seize the GM is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-alike 4.0 international license. All copyrighted materials referenced herein are held by their respective owners. No infringement intended, and no claim of ownership is implied.
The music for the show is Dreaming Spirit, off the album Ghost Machine, by The Enigma TNG. His music is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives, 3.0, Unported License.